Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil in the ones and twos. Apologies for my voice today. I've been overcoming a cold or something this week. But Sherry, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm good. I'm nice and peppy for the both of us. We're good.
Yeah, you're going to carry the day here, as always.
Not true. Well, why don't you say who our guest is before we jump in?
Our special guest today is Mad Tree Brewing's Trevor Self. Come on to talk about Mad Tree. They're expanding a new place. The Alcove. Is it the Alcove or just Alcove?
I don't know, but either way, it's lovely. I've been. And so that'll be fun to talk about.
For anyone who's familiar with, you know, the Over the Rhine, the old Kaze is where the Alcove. What to check with that? Is where the Alcove is. Mad Tree's latest and greatest project. So first, Sherry, you said to me before we got on here, you're like, what do we want to talk about? Or I said, what do we want to talk about? And you said, how about predictions for the U.S. Senate race? And I'm like, oh, my mind has been churning. It's been churning for a couple of weeks, but
I mean, I have to say, it's like that old Brady Bunch, kind of like how that used to be like, Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. I feel like it's primary, primary, primary.
Yeah.
Like Alex did a huge story this week on Gibbons. And so I've heard a lot about it in my house. Every commercial is the Senate race. Over the weekend, there was big news with the Trump rally. Like, I feel like everywhere I go, I am just really hearing, talking about, you know, this Senate race primary.
Most expensive race in America right now.
Well, that's because some of it's self-funded.
Yeah. I'm pretty tired of it.
I mean, we're almost there. Of course, that race is not going to go away. It's going to be a huge race after the primary with whoever the Republican candidate is versus Tim Ryan. And it's still going to be a nationally watched race. I expect, you know, the DCCC is going to pour a lot of money into here and the Republicans are going to have their eye on it just as much. So I thought, you know, why don't we let's get out the crystal ball, Jay.
I'll tell you, this has been a hard one. I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks, and of all my years of covering politics, this is the absolute hardest race to predict. And no one seems to have a good prediction.
Let me set the stage a little bit. Yes. I'm not going to give my opinion. I'm going to throw some facts out there. I don't actually have the numbers in front of me, which a little remiss on my part, but that's fine because we're just going to say everyone's, for the most part, spending gobs of money. So there we go. So gobs of money, that's going to be my term for this day. I think going into the race, it looked like Josh Mandel, you know, former state treasurer, Marine, you know, he really seemed to be like a favorite. Then we have kind of a dark horse like Gibbons, this Cleveland businessman. You're like, oh, a Cleveland businessman, that seems like a good Senate candidate. But he's been everywhere. I think I'm almost positive, like $8 million at least poured in from his money. It's a lot.
It's over 10, yeah.
Over 10 at this point. So then it was like, well, is Gibbons going to win this? And then you look at how Josh Mandel has been campaigning really in these very red parts of our state, you know, kind of like taking that Bible Belt mentality into Ohio. And, you know, I've seen campaign events at these large churches, but Gibbons, like, there's just the campaign ads are everywhere. Of course, Jane Timken, you look at her and you're like, well, she's the former party chair in Ohio for the Republicans. She's been, you know, we talked about this a couple times in the last few weeks. Like, she's the kind of candidate that's been at every Republican event in the state for years. And so you're just looking at all of these things. And then, poof, J.D. Vance, here he is. It's like, you know, he wrote this book, but that's not the scenario that's coming out with him. He gets, I don't know if it's magical or not. We're going to see. I'm sure you're going to talk about that in a second. He gets the, you know, former President Donald Trump's endorsement last Saturday, and those commercials were ready to roll out. The money came in immediately, you know, kind of to back up that endorsement. So I guess it is hard, Jay.
Yeah, it's hard. I've been thinking a lot about it. you know, like I'm probably write a column about it this weekend. And honestly, my prediction might change between now and then. I mean, my prediction is that I don't have a prediction, to be honest with you. That's how much I don't know. And that's how much most people will tell you they don't know. And the polls are, really showing that. I think I can safely say Jane Timken's not going to win. But then I think I can see an argument for all the other four major candidates and J.D. Vance, Mike Gibbons, Josh Mandel, and, Matt Dolan, an independent poll came out yesterday and which had him, I believe, in the lead or,
I think of Matt Dolan as the safety candidate. He's like the kind of the more traditional Republican candidate. And like, so if you're going to pick that safety school, you don't really know what to do at that ticket. And there's a lot of things like you're confronted with and you're like, oh, Matt Dolan.
Well, Matt Dolan really needed Jane Timken to drop out. That would have been a really big thing for him. And I think Matt Dolan also needed to get into the race. This is as crazy as it sounds. He got into the race last fall, which was later than anyone else of the major candidates got into the race, you know, just to have started to build name ID. You have to force me to give you an answer right now because that's what predictions are. And I'm going to stick with my prediction all along, and that's Josh Mandel based on name ID. I keep saying this. I feel like a broken record in saying it. But at the end of the day, name ID is worth statewide name ID is worth millions and millions of dollars. And no one else in the race has it except for Josh Mandel. And, you know, he has a base of support. He's had a pretty decent stretch. Just talking about politics. This is just political. Not saying I agree with the strategy, but in this primary, I think his strategy has been, in terms of the voters that he's gone after with his name ID, I think he still somehow ekes it out. And that's how I feel today. We'll see how it goes because this thing is fluid, Sherry, as you're seeing new things come out every day, new ads. As we sit here today, we've already re-record on Wednesday morning. There's already new ads that have dropped this morning. But, you know, I go back to, you know, this thing, everyone's really battling for Northeast Ohio, the votes. The raw, just because of the population, Northeast Ohio, the raw Republican vote, there's more voters there than there are anywhere else in the state. And so everybody's duking it out for those. And they're all probably going to, you know, split all that vote. So then you have to go look elsewhere. And I will say this, Josh Mandel has worked the Cincinnati suburbs, which is really the biggest probably – at least from a suburban area, the biggest Republican conservative suburbs in the state. And he's worked them very hard, and he's worked them much harder than I think any other candidate has. And, you know, this goes back several months, and his strategy of trying to build, build a base of support in Butler County and Warren County. And when no one else was in those counties, Josh Mandel was. I'm not, again, this is not an endorsement. This is just how I'm reading the tea leaves. You've been on the ballot. He's been on the ballot, statewide ballot, what, at least three times, ran for Senate in 2012. He's a two-term state treasurer. He was also a state rep from Northeast Ohio. And, you know, in terms of experience, In elected office, you know, Matt Dolan's the only other candidate who has any. And so I'm going to stick with Josh Mandel that his statewide name ID, his strategy of, you know, really trying to build up a base at other parts of the state ultimately help him eke it out. That's how I feel today. We'll see how I feel when my column comes out this weekend.
I'm looking forward to it, and I do love, like, sometimes I get reader reaction to your columns and, like, well, this or that about them, and I should tell everyone, I read Jason's column when everyone else does. I get an alert on my phone. I click on it. I am a subscriber, and then that's how I read Jason's column. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. I'll tell you too, Sherry, while we're making predictions, another tough race to predict is the Democratic primary for governor. That's another one that's really, really difficult to predict. Those two, at least in the few polls that have been out there, have run neck and neck, and that's John Cranley and Nan Whaley. You're silent. So we'll leave it at that, I guess.
I'm not going to make any predictions. Both sides are calling it for themselves, which I love that. Some good confidence. I do.
Yeah. We'll see. I think of the two candidates, John Cranley would be a much better governor. He has more experience. The work that he did, he's much more accomplished with what he did in the city of Cincinnati. But at the end of the day, neither one of those Democrats are going to beat Mike DeWine in the general election. So does it ultimately really matter in the grand scheme of the 2022 election? We'll see. That's my way of saying no. Anyway, let's jump over and bring on Mad Tree Brewing's Trevor Self. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And listeners, we know you love when we bring on folks from our food, restaurant, beer world here, our awesome brewing culture and brewing businesses here in Cincinnati. And no one does it better in my book. My book is Mad Tree and 50 West. And pleased to welcome Mad Tree Brewing's Trevor Self. Trevor, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
I mean, I feel like the introduction should be purveyor of the hottest new spot in Cincinnati, which is Mad Tree Downtown Alcove. Jason, do you have a question about that name?
Yes, I do. Is it the Alcove, Trevor, or is it just Alcove?
It's just Alcove, and then underneath it, we put by Mad Tree, just so folks can relay it back to the master brand and just another experience bar and restaurant, that they know and love our tap room in Oakley. And, we're taking all the things that we do well and trying to replicate it into different experiences for the great people of Cincinnati and surrounding areas.
You're a couple months in, you had your grand opening in early March. At Alcove by Mad Tree in the old Kaze, for people who are familiar with the OTR district.
Let's talk about the space before we kind of jump in. I mean, okay, so Jason and I have been calling it the old Kaze because that's what old people do. Like then, like all the old things, we just call them by their old names. But you've done something really special here with the building. You know, it's not only historic, but it's one of the oldest breweries, dating back to our history, like 150 years ago. So can you talk to us about your decision to open a second location downtown and how you kind of happened upon this space?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we knew that we did some research in our tap room and realized that, people were coming here to live life. And, we just happened to be a part of that with them. And we really wanted to be intentional about opening another space to do it in the way that, we think we can do it. And 3CDC reached out to us with, this space they had at 1410 Vine Street. And next thing you know, we started looking into it more and realized that it was built by a guy named Henry Weilert, who was a man of community, but also had his own little brew pub there where they served German food and beer, and it was just a place of connection. And we knew right then and there that this was an opportunity that we could not pass on, and also wanting to pay homage to the history of the building and all the things that took place there, as well as make it our own and make it something special. So Urban Blooms has played a huge role and creating that immersive space and look of nature with over 2,000 living plants in the space. And
is that in the indoor space? So now I have been there. and there's this huge living wall. It is so beautiful. So that you kind of brought the outside indoors. But they're also, speaking of Kaze, I mean, it was the patio downtown. And I feel like it's going to be the patio any second when the weather gets nice. We had two lovely days over the weekend, but assuming it's going to get nice at some point and stay nice. So do all those blooms, is that like the entire space outside too?
Then we also have a greenhouse bar attached to the patio space where there's tons of living plants inside of there. And then there's a little pulley system with herbs that we're growing inside of there that the bartenders will use in the cocktails as well as we start, you know, seeing warmer weather and the sun out more often.
Ooh, that's awesome. I want that in my house. Like we can have like in the kitchen. That's such a good idea.
Yeah. So just being able to take a step back and really figure out every single detail versus, you know, we got really lucky with our space here in Oakley, but it was more of like massive growth and needing to immediately come into a space and start brewing more beer. Whereas this was, you know, something that we really took our time with and did it right. And I think, you know, you're seeing people realize that and talk about the space as well as the food, as well as the cocktails and everything in between and how it all comes together for something really cool in a really special part of our city.
I mean, do you feel like, I feel like this has been like a long time coming. Like the idea, it is the experience. It's not just the experience of what you're drinking. It's how you're enjoying it in the spaces. And I think we're really starting to see that in the spaces here. When you look around the country, are we on trend? Are we kind of following things? How is this all fitting together?
I think, you know, we're definitely more becoming on trend versus following. And, you know, there's also an article that just came out about Cincinnati being one of the top cities for the best restaurants. And it's because of a lot of chefs in our city figuring out how to, you know, stay hyper local and hyper fresh, but also put new spins on things and, you know, create that immersive environment for people versus, you know, just coming in for a good food or good drink. And the customer experience is what people are wanting and longing for. And I think this is what's setting us apart and our city apart from others.
And this is really unique to Madtree. You know, when we think of Madtree, it's the massive tap room on the old industrial site in Oakley. And this is, you know, when you traditionally think of Madtree, you guys have really kind of, you know, gone out and kind of gone against the grain with this project.
Yeah. So, you know, we call ourselves crafts people at heart. And, you know, this was an opportunity for our bartenders who are mixologists to, you know, craft their own cocktails that'll be served down there. Our design team to, you know, look at patterns from when we were gutting the building and, you know, finding things from the past and being inspired by that to create the new patterns that are on our menus and our glassware to kind of tie this whole story together of what we want this space to be. And everyone's done a really good job of, you know, their own unique area and running with it. And then, you know, I think our owners, Kenny and Brady, were like, hey, we can do the drink side very, very well and the environment, but we need someone who shares and aligns our values with us of, you know, connecting people to nature and each other, but also being highly respected in the city. And that's when we met Stephen Williams, the owner and chef of Bouquet and Spoon, and approached him and said, hey, like, we've got this crazy awesome concept, but we need an expert from the food side of things. And he was all in. And he also does a really good job of training and mentoring chefs underneath him. So our executive chef, Brandon Lomax, is kind of one of the people he's been grooming and teaching, and he's, you know, being able to take Alcove and kind of and make it his own, which is really, really cool to see the support and growth that comes along with that, and, you know, the partnership of being able to pair our amazing beers and cocktails with, you know, what they create.
All right, so I do have a question, because this came up several times for me over the last 3 days when I was talking about the podcast. What is your charcuterie board like? Because that literally, people are hearing about the charcuterie board, and then they're like, I did not have that. I had like a sampling of a lot of other things. That's just not the thing that I had. And can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so it's a lot of local meats that are cured and pickled everything. Imagine from mushrooms to beets and other vegetables to some really nice different types of mustards and crackers. And this is something that Stevie Williams has blown people's minds with at Bouquet. And, you know, now bringing their own spin on it here at Alcove. It's just a really fun journey and experience to sample all sorts of different things and what pairs well together. The charcuterie boards are really popular and super fun.
And you can still get all of the Mad Tree's, you know, regular popular beers too, Psychopathy, all the regular beers, right?
Yep. So, you know, our main beers, our core beers, and then whatever, you know, seasonal rotationals like Rounding Thirds, Red IPA right now.
Yeah.
And then we also created a pre-prohibition style lager paying homage to Henry Weilert. It's called 1873 Lager. It's the year the building was built, and it's out on the front of it. And that's exclusively available at Alcove, and that's the number one seller down there.
Oh, cool.
Just because of the exclusivity and the story behind it, and it's just a really easy drinking beer, and it's fantastic, especially with like the charcuterie board.
But you also, you did just launch, I mean, it is 2022, a vodka seltzer. It's called Sway, right?
Yep, Sway by Mad Tree, ready-to-drink cocktail, vodka soda made with Northside Distilleries vodka. So we got our local friends down there, which is really awesome to be able to have their vodka in our product.
Is it, you know, you look at that, kind of the vodka soda, the seltzer world you're kind of one of the last to get into that. Did you push it off for a long time thinking you never needed to do it, or talk about the process of that and you finally kind of jumping into that space?
Yeah. So the seltzer and ready to drink cocktail category, you know, has absolutely exploded over the past few years. And, you know, we were hesitant at first to get into it because we don't want to jump into something just to, you know, get it while it's hot, but we want to do it in a Mad Tree fashion, do our research, come up with a great brand, make sure that our production team is confident in creating, you know, a premium product. And, you know, we also want to extend our consumer base and start winning with women or people that aren't necessarily drinking beer. And we figured this was a great way to kind of get into that segment. And so we also did a bunch of research and bringing in people for flavor combinations and, you know, what are people looking for? What do they like? And we landed on two unique flavor combinations. Strawberry guava is one, and then grapefruit ginger is the other. And they both pair really, really well together. Strawberry guava, I think, is going to just absolutely crush it this summer. It's like a poolside beer. And then the grapefruit ginger is a little more complex and a little bite from that ginger. So springtime, or, you know, like once you're done cutting the grass, that's where that can come in.
So I was there, I think, 3 weeks ago. I feel like I had the strawberry one. Would I have had it there? wasn't technically launched then, but okay, because that's what I had. And all right, so here's, like, this is the craziest thing, but you know what stayed with me? First of all, it's delicious. But the thing that stayed with me, because I'm not a big into that too much, there was no aftertaste. And I loved it compared to, like, a lot of the other ones. That you just, you know, that you take out with you when you're kayaking or tubing and all the things. And I always kind of shy away from that and usually bring my own in a water bottle. I swear when I'm at City Hall, my water bottle actually has water in it. But I did, it really did stand out to me as something special.
Yeah. And I think that's a credit to, you know, us not just jumping right into it, but doing the due diligence. And you know, that was one of the things we talked about too, is like, we don't like that aftertaste or that artificialness. And that's not who we are, anyway. So like, how do we do it that our consumers find it delicious, but also something that we're proud of? And I'm really glad with how it turned out. I think everyone's super happy.
Go ahead, Trevor.
So we're definitely working on, next flavor profile. So, you know, look later this year, hopefully in the fall, for some additional Sway by Madtree types of flavors, and, you know, trying to really expand this portfolio and see where it goes.
It's also a little different too. It's, you know, there's just the straight seltzer, and then there's the vodka soda, which, you know, I think, I don't know, does the industry consider those in two different categories, or are they all kind of lumped into one?
Yeah, I think the industry is really trying to figure out how to differentiate them. It depends on, you know, are you using spirits based, or are you using grain based for like a seltzer or those types of things. But I think the consumer is starting to learn the difference as well, because at first too, we didn't know, like, we just polled people of, like, what would you call this, just so we know that we're actually relating to them and conveying the right thing.
You know, now that you think, I was thinking about, because I saw Kenny, co-owner Kenny McNutt, recently, when I was, I do a lot of source meetings at Madtree, so I'll probably see you there sometime.
You're not supposed to tell people where you go.
Oh yeah, it's fine. I see all kinds of people there. You know, now I think about it, you guys have one of those, I forget what you called it, like the walls where the plants are.
Yeah, the living wall.
You have one of those at the tap room in Oakley.
Yep.
Yeah. That's similar to what you have at Alcove?
Exactly. The one at Alcove, just on a much, much more grandiose and larger scale, but yeah, it's done by the same company, Urban Blooms. And you know, there's a sprinkler system set up to it. They come out probably once a month and prune it, or, you know, make sure that, things are getting the water that they need. And not only is it beautiful, but it also creates a fantastic, spot for, you know, selfies or group photos. It's amazing just watching how many people just, even go and touch the leaves and be like, oh my gosh, this is real. It's just like, yeah.
That's part of today's experience, the Instagram photos. It just is, like, it's crazy. And I suppose commenting on that is like commenting on culture, but that's part of it.
Right.
Well, you know, and I don't think I've ever even taken the time to even ask or research this, but I mean, your name, Madtree, and your logo, which is, I think is just an awesome brand logo. And so identifiable, the tree. Where did that come from? Where did Madtree, the name Madtree, come from? As we are kind of talking about, you know, some of the things you're doing with Urban Blooms, and I know those aren't trees, but yeah.
The Madtree came from about years ago. I was sitting around a campfire, just you know, like, what are we going to call this brewery? And the word tree kept resonating and coming up, because it, you know, signified strength and growth and community. And then at that time, you know, they're the renegades and early craft beer guys. So they considered themselves mad scientists of, of brewing and making exactly what they wanted. They brewed Psychopathy over 20 times before they let anyone else try it, because they were going for a certain flavor profile that they wanted, and you know, wouldn't accept nothing but the best. And then someone was like, "Hey, like, what if we put the mad part of our mad scientists together with the tree, kind of like smashing it all together?" And you know, that's what stuck, and that's what they went for.
How many years? And, when was that? You said you broke up there, but like, how many years ago? What was that? 15 years ago?
So we're going to be 10 this January.
Is that it?
I know.
It seems like you've been around forever.
Right?
Yeah. Wait, 10 since the company started it, even over in Kennedy Heights?
Yep. 2013.
Dang. Look where you're at now. My gosh.
Right?
I remember going to that little tap room over there. It just seems like it was 20 years ago.
Exactly. I think the pandemic too, like I 2 months can feel like 5 years and vice versa. But yeah, it's the amount of success that we've had, and you know, the community's response to us has been amazing, and it's been a wild ride.
Yeah. What, talking about the industry, you know, I think we've asked some other folks who are leaders, like you're like Madtree in the craft beer industry in Greater Cincinnati. At what point, or maybe there isn't a point where you know oversaturation, like are we there, or do we have enough breweries, or are there going to be more coming online? Talk about sort of that kind of phenomenon.
Yeah, so I think there's we're realizing there's a couple different approaches you can take. You can be a place that is way more distribution and, you know, trying to get shelf space heavy, and then there's breweries that you know, have their own niche or crafted experience where, you know, they can keep everything in house. Maybe they do a little bit at store shelves or local bars and restaurants. But I mean, you look at, you know, right around here, we've got Nine Giant right down the street. We've got High Grain really close to us, and they're both fantastic places with great beer and great concepts and missions. And then, you know, 50 West is doing amazing things with, you know, that retro burger bar and kind of root beer stand looking thing with like all the activities that you can do there. And we love it because we can take our kids. So I think as long as you're doing something intentional, you're paying attention to the consumer, and you know exactly what you're going for. I think there's, you know, still room out there, but it's definitely getting harder and harder. And I think the days of becoming like the next Bells or Founders and New Belgiums, that's a really tough market to go to, because, you know, they're all great places. They may not be, you know, as local, but making fantastic product with a brand that people recognize. So
great.
And offering it in both places are very different experiences.
Yeah.
Yep. Even though they may be right down the street, it's like, no, like, you know, Nine Giant does their burger night, and they have, you know, amazing IPAs, and High Grain's got their little scratch kitchen as well. And it's fun, and you know, it's cool to see them succeeding and, you know, following what their passions are and differentiating themselves.
Yeah, it was interesting. We had Bobby Slattery on from 50 West. It was about this time last year. And, you know, his thing was that you could see, I don't know if he was basing this on whatever research or whatever, but there could be, you know, his research or something showed that, you know, you need a brewery within every 5 miles. Is that right, Phil? Yeah. Silent Phil. He's our, he's a big brewery guy. He's our producer. I want one more question just to, Is Sway in, is it in stores?
Yep, it is throughout Cincinnati, Dayton, and Northern Kentucky.
Okay, gotcha. Well, thanks. Is there anything else you want to share today with us about the goings on at Mad Tree?
You know, we're really all about connecting with people, with nature and each other. And we just released our second impact report that's available for people to view on our website. You know, just talks about like our commitments of wanting to give back to the community, how we're repurposing our spent grain, the six pack toppers. You can bring those back to our brewery and we'll send them back to the company and they'll be recycled, 100% recyclable and created into more six packs. So just, we've got a lot of amazing local partners from Cincinnati Parks to the zoo that, you know, we're all really trying to make a difference in our city and communities around us. So, you know, just know that, when you're supporting Mad Tree, whether it's, you know, at Kroger or at Alcove or in our Oakley tap room, that, we really appreciate it. And we're doing our best to make good go around, and reinvest, a portion of that back into our community.
It's awesome.
I think it's fair to say Jason and I'll be doing both in person and from the grocery store.
Love it. Love it.
Trevor, you know, my absolute favorite Mad Tree beer is, and like, it was just a special beer. And I've been told, I think Kenny told me this. I think a bartender or 10 have told me this. It's never coming back, but I'm going to keep asking anyway. And that's Butchertown. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. The was that a Chef Series beer?
I think it was. It was
grocery up in Columbus.
Is that what? Oh, I didn't realize it was like a Columbus. Okay. That beer was so good.
Yeah, and that's the problem sometimes is you're like, this was just a little collaboration, and then people are like, oh my gosh, I love it.
It was like a Vienna lager.
We're having
I think.
A huge party on May 14th in our Oakley space called One Good Party. We're going to have lots of events and things for kids from like 12 to 5, tons of bands. The Cliftons will be here, food trucks, just kind of celebrating our space and, you know, the work we do and the nonprofits around us. So May 14th, 12 p.m. to midnight, coming out. It's going to be a blast.
And that's at the Oakley, Mad Tree.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Awesome. Trevor, tell Kenny I said hey, and thanks so much for joining us here today. Appreciate it.
I will. Thanks so much for the time. Have a good one.
All right, thanks again to Trevor, and you know, congratulations to Mad Tree. They are, you know, one of our great businesses here in Cincinnati, not just in the brewing world, but I'm still just sitting here stunned that it's only been 10 years of Mad Tree, but what a 10 years it has been, and exciting to see them grow and you know, coming out of the pandemic here. And Sherry, that I think that shifts us into our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And
I'll let you lead it off.
Reds game. Even though they stink, it's still fun to go to a Reds game. And that's me, the dad talking, not so much me, the diehard baseball fan. You know, kudos to my son's third grade teachers, last week for putting together an outing for the entire third grade of his school, of third grade kids going to the Reds game last Friday night. And it was just a blast. We had tons of kids that you know, came to the game and parents, and so much fun. And you just being there, it was a beautiful night, and the Reds lost, of course, but you know, just the kids, like, you know, it was a fireworks night, and the kids, you know, they were excited about the fireworks. They were into the game. They went and did their thing on the little, you know, whatever the little wiffle ball field is, and ran around the stadium. And you realize, like, that's a special, special thing as a kid to go to a baseball game.
It's also unique to the Reds stadium, winning or losing, about the experience they have made for children there. I mean, I was there for opening day, and I walked past the playground, and it was full of kids and parents, and I literally was wistful. for even though at the time I was annoyed because you had to leave the game to go out there to go on that playground. But my son loved it so much, and that it's a memory for him that he loves. And they just do those things, that they issue a certificate the first time you ever go to the game. You have that. You can go and have a hands-on baseball experience. And they just, that stadium, they really have always put a premium on that. And so no matter what is happening right now, that experience is still there for children.
For children, yeah.
And also, you know, I noticed something on Twitter last night that really kind of made me reframe, because there a lot has been like losing streak. Phil Castellini, I guess he said something like a lot, right? And that we've been hearing about the Reds. But, you know, one of the local baseball reporters wrote officially 10,056 fans last night. And this is Wednesday, so Tuesday night, who didn't know where else to go tonight. And the Holy Grail Twitter account chimed in and said, we're thankful for them. And that was a reminder, too, that people are going out. No matter what's happening, the people, that is not a lot of people, and we all know that it wasn't actually 10,000 people.
Yeah.
But to me, it reminded me that it is part of our vibrancy of our city, and it all fits together like a puzzle. And you know what? Those people came out, spent money down at the banks. They're making the banks successful, and that's important right now, just as the Bengals winning last season and this coming season and what's going to happen down at Paul Brown Stadium. And so I was like, okay, you know what? It's a bigger picture than just winning or losing.
Yeah. And, you know, like we say, Sherry, well, I don't know about we. I've said this. I know others have said it. The Reds, they do a lot right. They do everything right except for win consistently on the field. You think about all the things around it. I mean, you're right. Like, they do a great job of adjusting, of being at the forefront of whatever the new trends are and fan engagement. And, you know, kids getting engaged in the playground, a little ball field and all that stuff and the food. And, you know, they do everything right except for have a plan to win on the field. Anyway, nonetheless, it was a enjoyable time other than the final score. But anyway, Sherry, we started this last week, ending with a few little announcements. Maybe something.
I know. I feel like it's a city council. They do this at the end.
Something good that happened, or something we need to correct from a previous podcast, or just, you know, little nuggets here where we have. Are there any announcements to make?
So I did want to mention something that's very difficult about the podcast. So I had an opportunity after last week's podcast with Gene Schmidt. Thank you for all your responses, and there were a lot of them, to have a conversation with Joshua Rultenberg, who is the State House reporter for Spectrum News. And I don't really know Joshua. I do follow his work. And, you know, Gene Schmidt was talking about what happened, and like she didn't really have a lot of conversations about reporters. And we made reference to, you know, what happened, a lot of reporters chasing Jean around the State House, trying to get her to comment. And she said that she was busy, and she just was kind of a passing comment. It's very hard to fact check things in real time on the podcast because you don't know. I wasn't at the State House. You know, I was in City Hall. But, you know, he reached out to explain about how many times that he really did try and get a hold of Gene Schmidt. He was aware of his coworkers trying to do the same thing, and he wanted me to know that. And it really resonated with me, because I'll tell you what, sometimes, I know this is shocking to everybody, sometimes people don't want to take my calls when they know what I'm writing about. And you know what I do? I go down there and I try and catch them in person. And you know, I would say there's one, you know, really time where I really did kind of chase someone down, just like Josh did with Gene Schmidt. It was the former Chief Blackwell. I really needed to talk to him about a lot of things I had written that week. He was being fired. It was a lot. And I did kind of run after him. It does happen. And so I just kind of wanted to put his perspective out there, because I've been there and I don't blame him. Like, she did drop a very, you know, a bill a lot of people had a lot of questions about, and it's our job in the media to get all the sides and answer all those questions. And there was only one person, and I appreciate her coming on. I feel like we got a lot more clarity. People can really hear her own voice. If you haven't listened to that one, please do. But I just wanted to say, you know, I appreciate that kind of reporting, and that's what really happened that day. He's not like that a lot. And so, you know, that's what needed to happen that day. And as a fellow reporter, I understand.
Yeah, and appreciate Josh reaching out. And Josh and does a fantastic job. I follow his work on Twitter. We have Spectrum News on the TVs in the newsroom. Him and Taylor Papalars just do a fantastic job, and the team at Spectrum. I've had Josh on my WLW radio show before, and his insight, and a true professional. And so, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Sherry. Great to bring that up. One more quick announcement, and want to say thanks to the readers of City Beat for voting our podcast number 2 in the city. Wish we were number 1, but hey.
I know, but you know who was number 1? The Cincinnati Zoo. I mean, to be fair, I did vote for us. Like, and that's an old, election thing. Like, if you don't vote for yourself, who are you going to vote for? But, I occasionally listen to the podcast and I know it's a great podcast. So I will proudly, it's good. Thank you very much to all of the City Beat readers.
It's funny that you say that, because the Cincinnati Zoo's podcast, and you look back on our podcasts, and one of our most listened to episodes of all time was Thane Maynard, the Cincinnati Zoo director. So people love them since Cincinnati Zoo. And so,
yes,
can't blame them.
And we do too.
Yes, exactly. Well, thanks so much for listening this week, and we'll catch you next week.